Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 71, Cultivating Inspirational Leadership with Mark Nitz, Shaping the Future of Work, Insights on Autonomy, Knowledge Management, and Decentralization from ClearSight Leadership. What this episode will do for you is introduce you to Mark Nitz's leadership philosophy and uncover the foundations of his approach, exploring how ClearSight Leadership aims to transform traditional leadership dynamics through empathy, strategic alignment, and cultural innovation. Help you redefine leadership for modern challenges, diving into Mark's perspective on the essential shifts needed in leadership mentality and practices to meet the complexities of today's organizational and societal challenges. We discuss empathy and strategy in leadership, and you'll learn about the critical role of empathy in strategic leadership, how it informs decision-making, and the process of aligning leadership strategies with organizational culture and values. Learn about overcoming obstacles in leadership evolution by understanding the common barriers to evolving leadership and organizational culture, from entrenched belief systems to resistance to change, and how to navigate these challenges. And we discuss the innovative approaches to corporate culture that Mark uses, his insights on transforming culture by prioritizing personhood, inspiring work environments, and fostering a sense of belonging and purpose among employees. But before we dive more deeply into this episode, in case you're new here, consider that I created the Thought Leadership Studio podcast to help listeners improve their thought leadership skills. So whether or not you consider yourself a thought leader at this point, consider that I've come to the conclusion that the practice of strategic thought leadership is now fundamental to effective marketing and helpful in any area of positive influence. It's about leading an audience to embrace a unique perspective that gives them more value. So this podcast is designed to provide an accelerated training process. And an important part of this is having models of excellence, for which I provide interviews of people who excel in one or more areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description for a summary of the episode with a curated transcript, a story and images, and additional resources and offers. So in this interview, I speak with Mark Nitz, the founder of ClearSight Leadership and Strategy, about the concept of inspirational leadership. Mark explains that his mission is to redefine leadership and help organizations inspire their employees. He emphasizes the importance of developing a strong leadership culture and aligning leadership skills with formal strategy. He also discusses his personal journey that led him to focus on inspirational leadership, including his experiences with workplace bullying. Nitz believes that outdated belief systems, such as the idea that business is not personal, need to be challenged in order to create a culture that values and inspires employees. Mark suggests that leaders should focus on clear communication of purpose and direction, decentralization of decision-making, and creating an environment that fosters innovation. He also provides practical steps for consultants, coaches, and business leaders to implement these ideas in their organizations. So without further ado, we'll jump right into the interview.
Hey
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I'm your host of Thought Leadership Studio, Chris McNeil, and I'm sitting here across Zoom with Mark Nitz, the founder and principal of ClearSight Leadership and Strategy. Welcome, Mark.
Good afternoon. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. I love what I'm seeing in your work. It has a lot to do with inspirational leadership, which to me is above and beyond what leadership is typically thought of. But can you kind of explain that distinction to me? What makes your mission, what makes what you do with your clients, those you work with, a journey where you're redefining leadership, as I'm reading from your site here, and create and witness organizations, I like that word witness, by the way, that don't just succeed, but truly inspire?
Some of the critical elements there are that we're looking to develop a better culture, and taking the concept of leadership culture and providing a little bit of improvement to, teach leaders how to be empathetic, or teach people how to communicate better, to a level of aligning those skills and capabilities with a formal strategy. And that formal strategy really plays out because of the vitality of a strategy, and strategy being about whether or not people are inspired to win, whether or not you're gonna come out on top. Mm-hmm. And putting those leadership skills, actually improving those leadership skills beyond just kind of what you hear in the current standard language. Oh, you need to communicate better. Oh, we need, resourcing and things like that, but rather the how-tos of all that leadership, and really learning in depth about your people, where their motivation comes from, which is entirely driven by the person. Mm-hmm. And how you can actually engage both personally and with their background, their experience in life, to inspire alignment with your strategy, with what you want done. And a lot of that comes down to how you lay out the entire playing field, and not just whether or not you have one or two better skills.
That's quite a deliberate and in-depth answer, and I love it. So to give our listeners a little context about where you're coming from and what you're trying to do, why don't we step back and if you could share what set you on the path you're on now? Was there a pivotal moment that set you off on this course of inspirational leadership development that you're doing now? Or what's your story that brought you here that would be meaningful to the work that you're doing now?
There are several, and they're very distinct, though. You don't have to read my whole history like War and Peace or The Rise and Fall of Rome in order to understand it. Uh-huh. I had a fair bit of experience with workplace bullying over the course of the years, and that actually started with my first professional experience. And over the last two and a half decades, what I've noticed is that those behaviors are pervasive, and oftentimes they are dismissed as, that person takes things too personally, which I consider kind of the motto of the workplace bully. And when an organization prioritizes that kind of attitude towards the people who bring value, there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And I think we all know it kind of inherently. Like we can feel it when things are wrong because we're a social animal. There's something about our brains that says, "Oop, this is a problem." But in the 21st century workplace, we're still taught that we should kind of tamp down that feeling, that concern. And I think it's the source of a lot of workplace anxiety. It's the source of a lot of fear. It's the source of a lot of failure, frankly. And so I decided to look into where some of these traits come from, look into where some of these beliefs come from in the modern workplace, but also dig into my own experience with it and align the two. When you're working with somebody who's willing to scream and yell at you and then turn around the next day and say, "Well, I just want you to get to be a better professional." It's like, okay, that's definitely not leading by example. It's definitely not doing any good for me feeling valued as a staff member or as a person. Something's wrong. And so I aligned those experiences with and the history of those concepts with what I believe to be true from a virtue perspective, that we're all human. We all have life experience in some way, shape, or form. And at their core, those two things alone shape a lot of what we bring to the workplace. And it's not that, having 20 plus years worth of experience in a particular area of a business means that you know better, but having lived a life, you've experienced a lot of things that make you unique. You're going to have some concept, some idea, some notion somewhere along the line that is truly valuable to the organization and that aligns with your motivation. So what I did was I packaged all that stuff up and I said, and I asked myself, what is a very brief description of what I'm looking to do with this info? And the very brief description is I'm looking to flip these corporate notions, these long-lasting myths on their head. The workplace is about people. Every decision that's made in the workplace is made by a person. You cannot extricate yourself from that personhood. And to use that line to say, "Oh, it's just business, it's not personal," is not only ancient, it's like that's a 100-year-old phrase, but is to say, I do not value the personhood of the person standing here that I'm telling to, just let it be or let me make the decisions. It's an autocratic attitude, essentially.
And it's denying the deep resources that personhood brings to the table.
Precisely. And if we can dispel that myth and rebuild the understanding of corporate culture, of organizational culture, based around people, based around the knowledge that these people bring immense value and they already want to be here, we're actually going to find over the course of the next 10 to 15 years that our productivity goes up, the value of our products goes up, the commitment of our customers and our clients to our organizations and our companies goes up because we're, again, it goes back to, we are a social animal. We're a gregarious creature. And those are the sorts of internal organizational treatments of people that will fan out, that will have that pay it forward effect. And the kind of bottom line piece of that example or story is that when someone goes to leave your organization, if you've done everything you can for them as a person, for them as an employee, and they're going to look for a step up in their career somewhere else, and you've helped them do that, That's the cultural influence that you're going to have. That is going to be part of your reputation as an organization. If you don't do that, your reputation is the inverse, that this person had to leave because they were not well cared for, they were not treated well, they left because there weren't opportunities.
So, and this is because of outdated belief systems.
It is, yes. Yep.
What are some of these outdated belief systems, and what are the counterparts of these new belief systems that you're looking to lead them to?
A great question. I've got some bullet point answers. they're bullet point because they need to be really, really clear. Number one, it's not personal, it's business, or it's business, it's not personal. That's 100 years old. In fact, I think it was 100 years old a year ago. And it's something that's been pervasive because it's useful to a corporation trying to suck productivity out of their people, not because it has to do with people. No organization is built without people. If you're a small business owner, a small business leader, even if you're a one-person show, your organization exists because there are people to make it exist. So it can't be, there is not yet AI for running businesses. Everything that comes from your business, your organization, has to do with ideas that come from people. Another notion, you can't choose your boss. In the last 5 or so years, we've started to prove that wrong. You can, in fact, leave an organization and go find someone to work for that you enjoy working for. So that's another platitude that I think needs to be left to the side. And then the one that I mentioned initially in the chat is don't take things so personally approach. Again, that's the motto of the workplace bully. And I agree, it's one thing to have emotional breakdowns in the middle of the office, but to be emotional, to have passion, to have motivational tie to what you're doing in the workplace is good. We don't want you to be an automaton. We want you to be passionate about what you do and what you believe about it.
So you think these beliefs might be relics of industrial age business design, where the first factories, where people were basically treated as machines, taught to do very simple tasks, and
Correct.
You could, quote, treat them as machines, unquote, because they were acting as machines. But now we live in a knowledge society. Now we live in information society.
Yes.
Now we have
absolutely
workers who are, have autonomous goals within organizations that need to be unleashed. And that thinking is obviously extremely outdated, but it's still everywhere, isn't it?
It is. It is. And the knowledge-based piece, I think, is also really important, because that's actually part of our step in the right direction. Is there are two fundamentals now that I think are, well, they're fundamentals now. They weren't 25 years ago. What's in it for me, which is a really good step that I think needs to be expanded upon, and then actual formal knowledge management, which is, I think, a key. A lot of people are aware of managing knowledge. How do we make sure that we know what, this person who's about to retire knows? How do we maintain that institutional knowledge? We can further that with a formal knowledge management system that I think businesses really need to consider as a truly formal effort. It makes life easier. It really does.
Sure.
Simplifies and expedites things like project management. But the going back to the what's in it for me, which is kind of a part of a, again, a step forward, or a kind of a big step up. You have to take into account what your people want and what they know, is taking that what's in it for me to a new level, which is, what if I don't like the results? And a lot of that comes in the practice of change management. But if we're not reaching out and asking those workers, what do you know? What do you know about how this works? How would you change it? Then when the change management comes along and we say, well, here's what's in it for you, that's good. It's a step forward, but there's that next step of, if you don't like this, tell me. Uh-huh. What would a bad result look like? They're the ones on the front lines. They're the ones doing the doing and participating in things like quality checks. They're going to know better what right looks like. And how do we know if the results aren't going to get us where we want to be? We should be asking them. And that's all about that knowledge transfer.
So part of that knowledge transfer, the way I'm understanding it, is decentralization of decision-making to some extent. Am I understanding that right? Is that part of it?
Yes. Yep. And that decentralization is vital to, A, being able to maintain, if you stick with the widget idea, being able to maintain, we've got widgets that need to be produced because we've got customers. You want people who are able to, you want staff to be able to make decisions about what works and what doesn't without having to run questions up the chain of command, get an answer, have that answer run back down the chain of command. Obviously, there are always two big, huge potential gaps there. Game of telephone never works, and the time it takes. So yeah, you need decentralized authority to make some decisions. You also want your people to trust you. And if you delegate authority, you say, hey, I'm going to assure there's disciplined initiative within this organization. They can make these choices. Your people have that breadth and autonomy to make things right, to make things work right. And they are going to self-align with their motivation.
So in doing the type of work you do, the consulting, the interventions, I assume, and correct me anywhere I'm off base, because I'm having to project a little bit here to imagine, how do you intervene to change the minds and beliefs of decision makers who might be too much caught in the top-down command and control mindset to allow this level of decentralization to happen, to allow their workers this kind of autonomy, to let them flourish, to let their humanity come out and align with the corporate goals?
That's a really good question and a really big challenge. I think there are two kind of top tier methods. One is come in through the people and have the people bring the ideas and the concepts, that kind of tribal knowledge development can influence leaders like that. That one's a bit of a challenge because you have to get in with the right people. The other is kind of call it consistent interviews and sitting down with somebody who is at least willing to listen and listen to the metrics, basically, that are not really the standard metrics either, but listen to the metrics of the valuation of the person. So what happens to the value of an organization, the customer engagement, when internally that staff is valued? How does that staff feel, and how does that feeling get replicated to the clients and the customers?
How do you measure that? How do you know?
Yeah, for ClearSight, I've developed a model for that internal staff value, and a lot of it is the staff input, the staff measuring how they are resourced, how well they're engaged, how they feel on a day-to-day basis, and whether or not they believe and trust in the capabilities of the organization to make sure they are taken care of, simultaneously with some algorithms for external client relationships, watching that metric to see how that metric also starts to trickle up when those internal staff are valued. And the jumping off point for that is was of course with organizations with companies who are already interested in, you know, being a little bit edgy, entrenched in corporate myths, but willing to lean out a little bit and take some chances. But it proves out that if your people have that sense of value and trust, so do the clients. If they don't, they project that emotion and the clients and customers pick up on it.
So it reflects back on the customer service time, yes. Which of course reflects back on profitability.
Exactly.
Customers control that.
Yep. And that profitability is, I think, too highly prioritized in terms of metrics. It's an interesting result, but the higher we prioritize that dollar sign, the less value that dollar sign has. Kind of like broadly in economics, if you flood the economy with cash, the cash starts to lose meaning. The same is true with that, putting that dollar sign as top priority in metrics. You know, should it be something you look at? Sure, you want to be able to pay your people. Should it be the first thing you look at? I don't think so. Your first order of business is the value and the inspiration of your people. And then it's interesting to look at that profitability result.
I love that you used the word inspiration. So when we're talking about, we're looking at inspiration, do you think that's innate? We just have to remove the barriers? Are there things we can do to help draw it out? How do you see the interaction of corporate culture and individual inspiration?
I see a need to communicate the vision. I see a need to connect. The modern leadership culture essentially requires that you connect the dots. And that's what some of this development of the Clear Sight model does, the Clear Strategy model in particular, lays out why you exist and digs deeper into that why. Is there a strong human purpose to your organization? And then takes the capabilities of leaders, upgrades those skills, upgrades the value of the staff, and then ties all those things together. Strategy has to be a living thing. And the importance of it, the value of it, is that as the environment, as the American corporate culture progresses, there's going to be elements of your strategy that have to shift because other organizations have a say in whether or not you're successful. The critical point is, or the critical effort is, to make sure we're consistently communicating we have a purpose. Our purpose is to, fill in the blank. How does the job coming up fulfill this purpose? How do you feel your functions within this program or this project fulfill this purpose? And if we lose sight of communicating that, that's where it goes off a little bit off the rails. So there has to be, it's not something that you should leave your people to just figure out on their own. You are responsible as the leader, senior leaders, for assuring that it's well and clearly communicated what that end state is supposed to look like. Not necessarily the how to do the job, but how that job matters and that meaning, the meaning of that task or the meaning of that project.
So clarity of purpose and direction, would you say that's a strong guiding principle of the work you do, the organizations and where you like them?
Absolutely.
And how does that relate to the day-to-day life of a decision maker within an organization? Where, how do I ensure that this kind of communication of purpose is going on? How do I know when it's not happening? How do I make sure that it is happening?
Yep. That's another really key element of this whole model. And that is that the leaders have to, the modern leader can't rely on what they learned 20 years ago. There's a transformation that needs to occur. Part of what I recommend is, hey, let's make this transformation in a way that affects a small project or small group of people first. That transformation is learning a new way to pay attention. It's not that people need to learn how, it's that we need to learn a new way. And that new way of paying attention is asking different questions. Not just, is this task going to be done on time? It's, you know, how are you this morning? And actually meaning it, you know,
that's great.
Understanding that, you know, when your staff arrive, they have life on their mind. Work is part of life, but life is much more overarching. Being able to help teams adapt, which is going beyond just, oh, instead of you doing this, you do that. Rather, what's our pool of talent, skills, capabilities, and how in the long term are we going to adapt that either to this program or this project and have it be a part of the plan or a contingency to the plan? Some other options, some other capabilities for those leaders to transform. Truly deeply understanding the strengths and experience of your team and finding points in time where you can say, hey, I know you love doing this stuff. Let's go do it. Here's how it applies. Here's where it is going to meet our long-term objectives and how it supports our purpose on this planet. And that's how that kind of that visionary cycle needs to play out. And we're going to steadily help the corporate world, the small and medium businesses in particular, work towards that, because that's what's enabling to your people and what will ultimately yield success.
I love that. I'm getting a few different threads here that are meaningful to me. One of them is getting out of your head and getting present with your people.
That is critical. Absolutely critical.
Well, and that has a lot to do maybe with what we mentioned earlier, is the whole industrial business design is top of mind in a lot of leaders, just because it's been indoctrinated in all of us for decades.
Yes, it has. Yep.
And like I said, was that Alfred Sloan with GM who invented the command and control management model to get a hold of all these different divisions? And it worked for him in that situation, but it's really distorting nowadays when we have a knowledge economy, we have an information economy, we have autonomous workers who have their own ideas and their own creativity they're bringing to this knowledge. And the more we inhibit and think of them as machine-like within a hierarchy, the less they flourish. But still, we have to make an organization coherent. One thing I'm getting from you on this is the regular, clear communication of direction and purpose is a part of that.
Mm-hmm. It is, absolutely. And then there's a fairly simple model for what I'll call the trickle down of that, which is assuring with your people, you know, let's say you're a senior leader, mid-level leader, with your people, assuring that you are honestly listening, and that honesty is a really, really big important part of that. Are you prepared for your day and your week? Are you helping your people prepare for their day and their week? Are you enabling the innovation of the people? You could have some amazingly innovative thoughts if you're a leader. What matters more is the innovation, innovative and creative ideas of your people. And then do you have in place architecture for developing that innovation and developing your people?
What kind of architecture would that be? That's interesting.
Yep. That would be if someone has a super fantastic idea, how do you try it out? What's your plan for trying it out? If your, you know, succession plans fit within that development too. It's not just the quote unquote beer truck test or the bus test, because sometimes it is, hey, I'm going to be out on vacation for 2 weeks. What are the people going to do while I'm gone? You shouldn't have to be worried about that. So there's succession planning in that too. That's part of the development. So it's multi-tiered and multi-pronged. It's not just, are you developing? There are pieces to this that I think really matter.
And one of them I'm getting is leaving space for innovation to come from your people.
Absolutely. Yep. And that innovation principle, I think if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a small business owner who's got, 8 or 10 years worth of success and you can look at how you're doing things. You say, hey, yeah, we're doing what I intended. What about the next 10 years? That's where both strategy and these principles come in. And one of those is look to your people. How creative and innovative are they? And how are you going to try out their ideas?
Yeah, that's a great question. Not everybody thinks that way. So to start to bring this to a conclusion that's going to be meaningful to our listeners, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that I typically ask towards the end of an interview. And the first one is for the listener, knowing that we have consultants who listen to the podcast, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. Coaches, leaders, business leaders, entrepreneurs. What would be the top three things you'd recommend they do that they could do right away that would make a difference that can only come from you? First of all. And second, if someone's thinking, Mark might have some value to offer my organization, I'd like to reach out to him. How would someone find you?
Yep. I'll take the second one first because it's a whole lot simpler. That is, I've got a website, clearsightleadership.com, a great way to find out a little bit more about what my company does. I'm also on LinkedIn. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Mark Nitz, pretty easy to find, Clear Sight Leadership and Strategy. Both of those pages are available. I certainly can provide some additional contact resources, but those are the primary ways to find out a little bit more. On that first part, I think I'll start with think deeply for those consultants, coaches, entrepreneurs, people looking to grow, that can take something today, right now, and have it start to impact their organization. What are your organizational values? And I don't mean the stuff that's on the wall. I mean, what do you truly value? And think through that over the course of the next several days. Write them down on occasion and don't cheat and look back. take several days, write them down. Those values are really part of what become the long-term vision. I think it's an exercise in virtue a little bit, but it's also an exercise in what's the purpose I'm going to communicate to my people moving forward when I make that transformation into this new style and engagement of doing business. Number two has to be about people, has to be about how you engage with those four principles of developing innovating, preparing, and listening, you can learn better listening skills in a matter of minutes or hours. I strongly recommend doing that. Even if you just try a little bit, it'll help. And then I'd say, like we were just saying, that innovation, creativity, architecture, think about how that can have long-term impact in a very positive way, because you're going to find both the inspiration and motivation of your people to fill that when you ask, hey, what else can we do? But you're also going to find plans and systems that you can enable, that you can develop, and have that architecture, those plans and systems start to work for your business now in a way that will impact 5 to 10 years from now.
That's awesome. Mark, this has been quite a pleasure.
Yes.
I appreciate you. And to the listener, all these resources Mark mentioned is clearsightleadership.com, LinkedIn page. I'm going to link to on the episode page. So if you're listening on an app, the link will be in the episode description. Appreciate you, Mark.
Thank you very much, Chris. I really enjoyed chatting.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach and consultant, fractional CMO. And this was a great interview with Mark Nitz. Hope you feel empowered by it, where we discussed topics like redefining leadership, empathy, strategy, and the human element in business. Going from old myths to new realities, transforming organizational beliefs for better futures. Knowledge management and worker autonomy, keys to modern business success, and the power of purpose, communicating vision for meaningful engagement. And of course, communicating vision is what strategic thought leadership is all about. It's about creating a powerful thought leadership model that leads your audience to get more value out of your category, and by doing so, building an enraptured, engaged audience. So make sure you go to the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. If you're listening on an app, the link is in the episode description. There will be links to Mark's website and LinkedIn, as well as the free Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, your guide to organizing the building blocks of your own thought leadership. Again, I'm Chris McNeil. Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Thought Leadership Studio.